Good. We're going to look at Genesis 1 together today. So if you've got your Bibles, then that it's quite easy to find. It's at the beginning. And that's where it starts as well, in the beginning. And those first three words of the Bible are really important, actually, and raise philosophers have been thinking about that subject, those first three words, and in fact, Muslim philosophers, as a justification for God, as a sort of philosophical argument for God's existence. Let's play that first clip. Sorry, I didn't give you much warning there, did I? Just spend time practicing stating the obvious, don't you? But they sort of make it mathematical, and then you know they have sort of equations. And anyway, it's fair enough if that's what floats their boat, that's fine. But for some people, that would be an interesting argument for them, and some people will go on to say, "Oh, but who caused God?" But if God is a true infinite. And they talk about, it's quite interesting, if you want to watch the rest of this, you can get it on, I can give you the website link, it's Damaris, and it's free, it's an A-level, we can put it on the web, it's an A-level lesson that they do, and so A-level philosophy, and they talk about true infinites being, like, we have mathematical potential infinites, where you could just keep adding one on forever. But a true infinite doesn't have a beginning or an end. And true infinites can't exist in physicality, because if you took away every other one of a true infinite, you would still have a true infinite, but it would be half the size, and that's obviously impossible. And now I'm getting too far in. But I found that quite interesting. So it can't be a physical entity. And so with God, we can say he is a true infinite. He had no beginning and no end. There was nothing before God. God is not a created being. For us created beings, we need to look for why did that happen? Who made that? All those sorts of questions. And so for us to understand God, because he has no meaning outside of himself, his meaning comes from inside himself, because that's what God is, means that God had no cause. There was no cause for God. There was no beginning. So in the beginning, God is quite a powerful statement. And that can take some people can think about that for days and weeks and years. And I think that's great that they can do that. Do you know what I mean? So then thinking about creation and all that sort of thing. So it sounds like centuries ago, philosophers were already having these thoughts about the universe must have had a beginning. Anything that exists must have begun to exist at some point. So therefore, the universe must have begun to exist, is how they argue it. And then much more recently, scientists looking at the stars and everything and how they are spreading apart from each other have come up with the idea of the Big Bang, that the universe, and they believe, all scientists seem to believe, that the universe had a beginning. And it was an instantaneous beginning as well, which is interesting, isn't it? Because when the Bible says, in the beginning there was God, and there was nothing else, and God said, let there be light, and there was light. Bang. I really think that the Big Bang fits beautifully with Genesis. And then obviously there are lots of different theories about what happened next. Some Christians believe that Genesis chapter 1 was literally true, and that a day is literally a day, a 24-hour period as we know it now. And of course, God could have done it like that. He's powerful enough to have done it like that, and all those sorts of things. But of course, actually, he didn't make the moon and stars till, was it the third or fourth day, the sun and the moon. So you can have a look for me. I didn't doesn't matter really. So a day could mean anything to God as well, couldn't it? And a day is like 1,000 years to God, as we know, you know, in terms of his perspective on things. But some Christians believe, you know, if we're not going to start there believing the Bible to be literally true, where are we going to start? With Noah or with Adam or with Abraham, you know? So that's food for thought as well. And then there are the evolutionists who believe there is no God and everything we have here, all the life evolved by lots of random chance and only good things, only things that were beneficial survived, you know, and so all the other random chances went out the window, and that's how natural selection works. And then there are Christians who believe in intelligent design, which is basically saying, oh yes, all these fossils and everything and all the historical and geological record makes sense because that's how God created things, but God is in there in the design, etc., etc. I'm probably more of the intelligent design theory, because for me, anyway, I think, why would God have put all those fossils in the ground if that's not how he did it? You know, and geology, why would geology look like that? If he did it in 7 days, and that sort of thing. But, and here's the important thing, I haven't got the reference for it. Do not argue about debatable matters. I'm sure I put something in there. Where's the reference? Oh, there it is. Romans 14, anyway, I've got. There may be, it may be somewhere else as well. Romans 14, verse 1. Accept him whose faith is weak, without passing judgment on disputable matters. One man's faith allows him to eat anything, and another man whose faith is weak will only eat vegetables. So if you are a Seventh-day Adventist, or whatever, or if you have other thoughts on other than that, then that's fine, and you'll just have to accept me without judging me, you know, and accept the intelligent design theorists or the evolutionists. Really, at the end of the day, what does it matter how God did it? We know, as long as we know that God did it, and God, you know, is the author of everything and that sort of thing. So, so I really don't want to get into any of those debates, and I think people who do, I really think they're wasting their time, and I don't understand them. But for some people who are not Christians, that might be a big stumbling block for them. Personally, I don't think I've ever met anyone who it really was a big stumbling block for. I think the only time that's ever come up in conversation was just when people wanted to have a conversation. You know, it wasn't really ever a burning issue for them that was stopping them coming to Christ. You know. So there you go. Chapter 1, verse 16. God made two great lights, the larger one to govern the day and the smaller one to govern the light. He also made the stars. And then it goes on. And I just love reading the creation story because it's just so amazing. I really relate to God through creation, you know, for me. That the trees and stars and, you know, like Carol, when she really met God for the first time was when she was out in the countryside and saw the Milky Way when she was a teenager, and it was just awesome for her, you know. Well, there must be a God, for all that to be there. And I love the way it's all this little throwaway comment. He also made the stars, you know. it's like it's nothing for God to also make the stars. He is so awesome. Let's have this clip. I'm thinking about that. Can you see? This Star Wars one. And I really love the perspective that gives, you know, that the way you zoom in out, and it's, I mean, the Earth's pretty big anyway, isn't it, for us, compared to us. You can feel like if you go out on the ocean or stand on a mountaintop, you can feel really small. But then to go to the moon, and the Earth looks relatively small, like, you know, bigger than the moon looks to us, but smaller. And then to imagine, you know, being able to go that far away that quickly, you know, actually compared to the rest of the galaxy, the Earth is really, you know, compared to the Sun, the Earth's really small. Compared to the galaxy, the Sun's really small. Compared to, you know, you get bigger and bigger and bigger, and the vast expanses of the universe we can't even imagine. And God made all that, and you know, is ruler over all that, you know, it's just, it blows your mind when you really think about it. And he's awesome and powerful to make those things. So that's how I like to think of God sometimes. And it's probably important for us all to think of God like that sometimes, because if we don't realise how awesome and amazing and powerful he is, then when we meet him, or when we realise what he's done for us in the cross, or anything like that, and we're never going to fully understand it, are we? But you're not getting a taste of who did this for you, and you know, in the cross, and who it is that's loving you. You know, when God says I love you, it's not like me saying I love you. You know, if I say I love you, then that's quite nice. But when God says I love you, I think about you. You are always on my mind. Then that really is amazing. Do you know what I mean? So, some time to think about that. Of course, creation is really cool, and I'm really into that. But some people, like Dave Halls, much prefers to do people watching than tree hugging, and because people are amazing as well, of course. And God's created people. We're going to talk about people now. So on the sixth day. Yes, it was the sixth day, wasn't it? Verse 26. God said, "Let us make human beings in our image to be like us. They will reign over the fish and the sea, the birds in the sky, and the livestock, all the wild animals on the earth, and the small animals that scurry along the ground." So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Then God blessed them and said, "Be fruitful and multiply. Fill the earth and govern it." The be fruitful and multiply thing. He'd already said that to the animals as well. When he made the animals, he'd said, and in fact before that, when he made the plants, he says that every seed-bearing plant will bear fruit and make seeds and reproduce itself. So, you know, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth, essentially. And so one of his things there in creation is that he's sort of winding it up and setting it go. You know, he's interested in watching things grow. He's like a gardener. He likes to see development and progress. You know, he's not just like a stonemason. He's not making the earth like a stonemason makes it, where it's done and there it is. He's making the earth like a gardener. He's saying, "Come on, grow." He's a nurturing God. Already, you know, even on day three or whatever it is, when he makes plants. And the same with animals, you know, make more of your own kind, grow, do it, you know, be free to multiply and to grow and to stretch out throughout the earth. And so there's a lot about freedom in that as well, isn't there? And he says the same thing to us, be fruitful and multiply and, you know, and be abundant. He's a God of abundance, which is just fabulous. And he made us in his image. Now, and this is why, and I once heard somebody say, we don't make images of our God because God's already made millions, which is just lovely, isn't it? So it's almost like each individual we should be treating almost like that they are an idol. You know, like people who worship statues. Not to worship them, but to have that sort of reverence, because this is God's image in front of me. You know, you are a picture of God. He's made you to look like him. He's made you to be like him on the inside. And so we are so precious. And so if you have any sort of self-image problem, then get over it, because you look like God. You know, you are the most beautiful thing God ever made. He made people less on the in this creation story. We are the height of creation. He made all the other things and he said, people, that's the last thing. And then he rested. And you know, and he said it's good. You know, and so if you have any self-image problems, then you've got to switch it around. You're not seeing the right bits of you. You know, you're not seeing the God bits of you. And if you have any anger problems with other people, here's the issue. You need to start seeing them as a precious person that God's made as well. And any relationship problems we have, until we can go to the person with that sort of heart of, you know, you are a precious person that God made to look like him and to be like him inside in lots of ways, then you're not going to get anywhere with that relationship, I would suggest. Now, we don't do this very often, and I'm partly doing it today because of the cold, and we do it in different ways, but something the Anglicans do, which I really love, I think Catholics do it as well, don't they, is to share the peace. Catholics do it, don't they, yeah? So what happens is everybody stands up, and you shake hands, or have a little hug, or something, and you say, peace be with you. And the answer is, also with you. Okay? So, peace be with you. Peace be with you. Peace be with you. Peace be with you. And also with you. Yes, I am a bit chilly and I'm moving around.
Peace be with you and also with you.
Get it all in there.
We need to get warm. Peace be with you, Andrew. And also with you. Peace be with you.
Thanks,
great. Thank you. Peace be with you, Rosie. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Peace be with you. Peace be with you, Sam. Oh, and also with you. How's your hand?
I had a bit of a slip, so I pulled it.
Ooh, that's not good. Oh. Okay, have a sit down.
Interesting fact. You know, you talk about the Earth. If you take the size of the Earth as a tennis ball,
yes.
The Sun is 7 meters.
7 meters. Yes. Amazing, isn't it? Lovely. So you're precious, and please feel valued. I hope you do. So if we love God, then we should love each other. And where am I now? John, 1 John, verse 20 says, "If anyone says, 'I love God,' yet hates his brother, he is a liar. For anyone who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, who he has not seen." But that comes back to this. God loves us all. God has made us all to be like him. We can't love God if we're not loving the people around us. Or at least we're not seeing God in the people around us if we love God and hate somebody, you know, somebody else. We need to be so then that's really strong, isn't it, as well. So yeah, I'll just leave you that for now. Coming back to how much God loves us, though, is that coming from the children's room? Oh, right. Sweet. When I had Bethia, it was probably around 3 months. She was 3 months old when I really felt that I was bonded with her. And for that 3 months till at least 6 months old, she was just the most beautiful person in the whole world. And I've never seen any baby more beautiful, and she was so precious, and she absolutely couldn't think about much else. And you know, when she smiled at me, it was the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to me, you know, and she'd just beam at me as if she felt the same way about me as I felt about her. And it was wonderful. And the funny thing that happened is that if I saw somebody else's baby in those 3 months, I thought they were really ugly, you know, and I'd never thought that, because I'm a real baby person, at least I was in my teens, and you know, oh, baby, you're so cute, you know, every baby was the most beautiful thing, until I had Bethia, and then suddenly, other babies, they just look wrong, you know, it's like, no, that's not, this is what babies should look like, that doesn't look like this is my baby, so it's wrong. And it was at least, there were 6 months before I started thinking, oh, you're quite cute, really. But because I loved her so much, it was just anything that wasn't Bethia was wrong. And that was a time that I really realised how much God loved us. And not just that, but around that time, you know, that really makes you cry about wars when you've got babies, doesn't it? Because I didn't have a boy, but my friends had boys, and I could see, that was the other thing. I could see, when I was in this 3 months, I could see that my friends loved their babies as much as I did. And I was thinking, almost thinking, you strange people, how can you not see that your child is nowhere near as beautiful as my child, you know? And it was almost, yeah, and I knew that that was wrong. And you know in your head that everybody will think their own child is most beautiful, you know, and I knew I was being slightly psychotic, but, was, yeah, and anyway, but these boys, you know, I was thinking, but actually these boys, they are just as sweet and lovely as my baby, and they are so, you know, they're just as babyish, and, you know, they're so helpless and all those sorts of things, and to think of how you get from being a baby boy to being a soldier, you know, or to being a despot even, it just made me cry, and I just know that whenever, you know, there is war or abuse or, you know, just violence generally, it just breaks God's heart, because that's his baby, you know. And if anybody did anything to my baby, even, you know, like toddlers coming and pushing my baby over or something, you know, I was so angry with them. And, you know, it's like, you get away from my baby. And you just know that God is that angry when people hurt his people, you know, his children that he made. And so that is partly why the cross is so amazing as well, isn't it? That he was that angry with those people who hurt other people, or with us when we hurt other people, actually, because we do it, don't we? You know, maybe we've never killed anyone, but we hurt people, but he can forgive us, and he could go through the cross whilst we were still sinners. Jesus died for us, you know, and this is the God who flung stars into space, who loves us as if we're his precious baby, and would die for us while we were still sinning, while we were still killing him, you know, and just amazing. We're nearly done now, but this is the last point. Yeah, we're nearly done, so that's good. Is the thing about the sixth day, and this is almost quite unrelated, isn't it? And it's actually not even in chapter one; it's in chapter two. The seventh day, and so he did those 6 days, and he said it's good, and it's all great, and I'm really happy with that. And on the seventh day, he rested, and that reminded me of some stuff I heard in some seminars years ago, a seminar, about retreat, about the Christian ideas of retreat, and how, you know, getting away, having like a whole day in silence or something like that, which at the time, all those years ago, would have been my idea of hell, having a day in silence and not talking to people. But now, actually, it's starting to appeal. now I have children. you know, a day of silence and nobody wanting anything from you. And so I was looking at Lee Abbey online and, the Christian Retreat Resource Centre or something. There's a group of people sort of almost campaigning to encourage people to go on retreats. And it's all about getting to know yourself and getting to know God better. We haven't finished before the children, have we? No. I mean, the children finished before us now. Okay, just to bring that to mind, but also, obviously, it's about balance as well. There's a lot in the media about work-life balance, isn't there? And God worked for 6 days and had one day rest. And we're not going to just get to know ourselves in that one day. If we were just trying to relate to God in that way, that wouldn't be very good either, would it? Because then you wouldn't be relating to God in the 6 days. We need to learn to relate to God in the 6 days of work. But actually, God gave us an example by taking that one day of rest, and maybe we should learn to value that. Because I think in our background, you know, where we come from in the charismatic movement, we've forgotten about retreat and rest and spending quiet time with God. But maybe we should start valuing that a bit more as well. So I think that's where we'll finish for today. Okay.